Gone are the days of knights and chivalry, and yet that hasn't changed God's vision of you as a man of valor. Today, pornography is a simple mouse click away, and sexual addiction is at an epidemic level. Dr. Mark Laser is an internationally known author and speaker, the leading Christian authority on sexual addiction, and the host of Faithful and True's online radio production, The Men of Valor Program. Here now is Dr. Mark Laser.
Welcome to the Men of Valor program. Today, Randy, we're going to continue our trek through the Faithful and True workbook, and we are on Unit 7, and today we're going to talk about the fourth and fifth lesson.
Yes, the sexual addiction cycle.
I do want our listeners, our audience, to know for sure that we're talking about some original ideas that Dr. Carnes first had and were published for the first time in 1981.
We also want to thank, we got a very, very nice email from one of our regular listeners who, after hearing the series, now that we're several weeks into the Faithful and True workbook, sent you a thank you email, a congratulatory email, referring to the Faithful and True workbook as...
You're really leading me into this.
I am. I'm making you tell the audience what he referred to it as.
The 67th book of the Bible. Which is so absurd that I'm surprised you would bring it up, Randy.
Well, I immediately pointed out to you before, you know, such rave reviews would actually have any chance of going to your head, which I know you would never let that happen. But I just thought, let's not to get too big on ourselves here. But that's a fine compliment.
That was a very nice way of affirming the work that we're doing and the value in his own life.
Yeah.
I think that the work
we appreciate that he is receiving great direction from it. So let's jump into this cycle of addiction. Tell us about that.
Well, the cycle of addiction was Dr. Kern's first attempt to describe the spiral that we get ourselves into, the repeating cycle, the downward spiral, if you will, of addiction. And I should say that this spiral of addiction, this cycle, really refers to all kinds of addictions or problematic behaviors. It's the locked place that we get ourselves into. Now, when Dr. Kearns first described it, he was very big on also describing shame. In our last lesson here today from this unit, we're going to get into a little bit more about the core beliefs of shame. He felt that addicts tend to have a lot of shame, and shame is the product oftentimes of beliefs and perceptions and meanings that are brought out of our life experience growing up. And I think as things have evolved, we've added to where some of these core beliefs come from. It's not just your family of origin. It might be your neighborhood of origin, your school of origin, your church of origin, your extended family of origin. It's not just your parents. So as long as the listeners don't get too preoccupied with trying to figure out whether their mom and dad created all of this stuff. We do know that the average guy who walks through our doors does have a great deal of shame, and some of it is stuff he learned in childhood.
And shame, is it not true? Shame is one of these first steps. You're not automatically thrown into the middle of the sex addiction cycle. Shame is like that first stepping stone leading you towards the cycle. Is that not right?
That is right. Shame is the emotion, the feeling, the perception of self that will lead you into what we would refer to around here as coping. You're going to figure out ways to cope with that. We don't like the feeling. We'd like to get rid of the feeling. We may have figured out ways of medicating that feeling. And there can be hundreds of ways that we medicate that feeling. Some of the classic ways in terms of substances are, you know, alcohol and so forth. Watching too much TV, working too much. You know, we've talked about this numerous times on the show that we all probably have a variety of coping strategies. In the life of a person who struggles with sex addiction, they have learned that the neurochemistry of sexual arousal is one of the ways that they cope. And therefore, the next part of the cycle, as it's outlined, is it starts with shame, and then we know we move through some need to cope. And then there will come along triggers that will kind of get the whole cycle started. Triggers could be anything from some direct sexual stimulus. We talk about the trigger of the week here in a little bit. It could be something like that. Or it could be an emotion that we feel like shame or like anger, or like anxiety, like sadness or loneliness. And anything that would trigger us into that feeling, any kind of even life event or so forth, that could be the triggering event. And from there, then we go to the first stop along the way of the addiction cycle, which is generally referred to as preoccupation. We get preoccupied with a sexual idea.
That means you find yourself throughout the course of your day being locked into only those types of thoughts.
That's right. And for the life of a sex addict, this could be, when we say preoccupational, it could be hours per day. It could be just repetitive thoughts that you can't seem to get out of your head. Other words that are used here are fantasy, lust. But basically, the idea here is that you're preoccupied with a sexual thought.
And where does that preoccupation lead you to?
Well, in the cycle, it's going to eventually lead you to some form of acting out behavior. We discussed in our last show some of the various forms of acting out behaviors. So anything from masturbation all the way up to crossing the flesh line and having affairs and, you know, other kinds of sexual activities that we described. But in between that, in between the preoccupation and the acting out behavior, which is actually at the bottom. So if the listeners out there would just envision a clock, the preoccupation stage is right at the 12 o'clock place. The acting out is actually at 6 o'clock, and the in-between stage is called ritual, and ritual is really at the 3 o'clock place.
Okay, and ritual, the ritual can vary from individual to individual?
That is right. It's really totally unique to every individual. But if you think about ritual, it's basically any preparations in a way that you need to make in order to act out. So you have a thought about acting out. You have a fantasy or a mental picture of acting out. Do you need to get someplace? Do you need to gather things to yourself? Do you need to make free space for yourself? For example, one of the illustrations that we always give is the guy that late at night looks at pornography and masturbates. Part of his ritual may simply be to wait until his wife goes to bed, and he may do what he needs to do to make sure that she's asleep. And then he goes downstairs or goes into the room where the computer is, and he starts surfing the net, or he has his favorite websites that he already knows to go to. And eventually, when he gets himself stimulated enough with this pornography, then he would go ahead and act out in an act of masturbation. That's a fairly short ritual when you think about it. It might only be an hour or two from when you first get the thought in your head to when you actually act out. Although, you know, some of the guys might have been thinking about doing this all day long, you know, just
so they've built up the anticipation of it.
Yeah, part of the power of the preoccupation or the fantasy is the anticipation of doing whatever it is you're going to do. There are the guys that have, you know, other more complicated acting out. Let's say they are engaging in massage parlors. So, you know, part of their ritual could be to figure out how to get the money. Massage parlors cost money, particularly the more kinds of sexual activity you'd like to have. So they figure out ways to stash cash away, take it secretly out of the bank account, do whatever they do to get the money that they need.
It's much more complicated than slipping into your office in your home and turning the laptop on.
That is right. That is one of the more primary rituals. And, you know, as you move up the scale of severity of acting out, it may involve more preparation, more planning, more saving, more excuses. You know, you're going to have to figure out if I need to be away from the office or away from home in order to go to a massage parlor. You got to have to figure out excuses as to where you are and what you're doing.
Right. Where were you? What took you so long? Where have you been?
That's
I
right.
tried to reach you. And so that ritual part of the cycle can really vary so much from individual to individual, depending on also how long they've been an addict. I mean, you've told us before the concept of, like with any addiction, like it takes an alcoholic more drinks to reach the same high.
Right.
The mm-hmm. same applies to a man struggling with sexual purity issues. He is going to need to engage in looking at deeper levels, new unexplored levels of pornography to reach the same excitement level?
Well, you may not ever graduate away from just looking at pornography and masturbating, but yes, he would spend, I was looking the other day at the statistic on what is the average length of time on a website, and it's like 38 seconds. So, you're not there very long, and then you get bored with that, and then you move on. What you're talking about is that as the neurochemical tolerance factor increases, we're going to need more stimulation, more excitement. Sometimes that leads us into more dangerous places, more involved activities. One of the interesting parts about the ritual is that the ritual carries with it secrecy and perhaps danger. So there's adrenaline to that. And some would say that the rituals themselves can be addictive in nature. And rituals happen before you ever, act out, at least sexually. The longer rituals for a lot of people tend to be when you cross the flesh line and have affairs, and your ritual could be in terms of how you recruit sexual partners. These days, as opposed to my day, you had to meet people in public and engage in various banter and dialogue in order to get to an affair place. But these days, you can just go online and make those connections, and it tends to be much faster. But that's still a ritual. To go online is still part of the ritual.
Right, exactly. Well, we will complete the sexual addiction cycle exploration here on the other side of our break. But for right now, you're listening to Dr. Mark Laser, and this is the Men of Valor program, and we'll be right back. Well, back to our discussion about the sexual addiction cycle. When we left, you were expounding about the ritual step, and to complete the circle there, we've got acting out and then despair.
Before we leave ritual, there's one thing I forgot to mention, and that is that rituals also involve excuses. They involve the minimizations, the rationalizations, the justifications. In other words, for you to be in your ritual and to cross your own moral barriers, you've somehow got to come up with some rationale why it's okay for you to be doing that. So thought life is also part of the ritual. Now we get to the bottom, which is acting out. We don't need to cover that again. We covered it last week in terms of the various kinds of sexual acting out behaviors. And there, one of the points to make here is that the average addict may have several different kind of acting out behaviors that they're doing. They may be masturbating. They may be looking at pornography. They may be having affairs. They may be going to massage parlors. They may be doing lots of different things. And what is true is that you can have rituals that lead you into those behaviors going on simultaneously. I remember that in the old days of having sexual encounters with women, I would have rituals going on with several women. And in the meantime, I had my pornography and masturbation rituals going on simultaneously. So this can get to be complicated. And also, it speaks to the point you were asking about earlier. As our neurochemical tolerance increases, the balls that we're juggling in the air in terms of various activities can get to be quite extensive and quite stressful in and of themselves.
Well, you list for us here a passage from Proverbs 28:13, which says, "He who conceals his sins does not prosper, but whoever confesses and renounces them finds mercy."
That's right. So we need to get honest about all of the secret stuff that we're doing. The rituals are about secrets. We have to maintain secrecy about them, otherwise somebody's going to intervene. So yes, there's everything about our program of healing and recovery that is about getting honest, even about some of these ritual behaviors. And I would tell you, by the way, that it's harder to get back to some of these. Some of the guys, when they first come in, they don't realize all the planning and preparation that they've done to act out. They just know that they've acted out. They know they need to stop that. They don't quite have a sense in the early days of all the other boundaries that they're going to need to have to enforce. So in other words, if I'm a guy who has affairs, and part of my ritual has been to engage in conversation with women out in public, one of my boundaries is going to need to be that I don't do that anymore, that I don't have private lunches or coffees or conversations with women, in my case. So understanding your rituals will lead to a healthy set of boundaries is part of what I'm trying to say.
Well, once you've been engaged in this cycle with shame leading to coping, leading to triggers, preoccupation, bringing you to your rituals, your acting out, that leads to despair.
Yeah, that's the perpetuation, really, of the feeling of shame. So the whole thing started with shame, and now you've acted out again, and now you say to yourself, gee, I wanted to stop and couldn't. I must be a terrible person. I couldn't control it. I couldn't stop. Here I go again. And one of the things that fascinated me in the early days when I was learning some of this stuff from Dr. Carnes, he had actually done a study with some alumni of the treatment program, and he found in that study that 71% of the addicts that had been treated at that point had actually at some time considered at least suicide. Now, that's not about the guys that actually have tried, a couple along the way who had been successful, but successful meaning that they had actually committed suicide, not successful. I'm mixing myself up here.
You're not putting a positive spin on suicide.
No, I'm not. I'm not trying to do that. I'm just saying that they had had a plan. They carried it out. But 71% of the guys had thought at some point they'd been depressed enough. There's something about this stage that is about shame and depression and despair, which is what it's called, that there's no hope. I mean, basically, this is a stage there's no hope. So if, in fact, at first, where this whole thing got started, we began with a sense of shame, then despair will lead us back into our need to preoccupy with the sexual fantasies that we started with. So that's why it's a vicious cycle, and it leads us back to the top. One of the things that's been an amendment to this, I think, along the way, is that when we get to despair, and your average addict might have other ways that they cope, that place of despair might lead them into drinking or eating or TV watching or working or smoking or whatever it is. So we might have a variety of ways that we cope, and despair can lead us into other addiction cycles as well. But if sex is the primary way that we cope, it will always lead us back to sexual thoughts, preoccupation, fantasy.
Well, as usual, I appreciate, and our listeners appreciate, because I've heard from them, at the end of each of these lessons, and we've been reinforcing this recently with there being some thought given to spending more time in meditation, you recommend the following affirmation: to say this quietly to yourself, separate yourself from the busyness of your day, and say the following affirmation 5 times. I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. And that comes from Philippians 4:13. The focal passage says, I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate to do, I do. And if I do what I do not want to do, I agree that the law is good. As it is no longer I myself who do it, but it is the sin living in me. I know that nothing good lives in me, that is, in my sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For what I do is not the good I want to do. No, the evil I do not want to do, this I keep doing.
That's kind of the central unmanageability passage that we think about. You're quoting Romans 7, verse 15 and following, and it's kind of that unmanageability passage. There's things that I want to do, I don't. There's things that I hate doing that I keep doing. Later on in the passage, Paul says, what a wretched man am I, which is what? About shame. And that leads us into really the final lesson in this unit, the core beliefs that start a lot of this off to begin with. By the way, you also had the affirmation related to Philippians 4. And, you know, Philippians 4 also reminds us to think about good things as opposed to destructive or negative or sexual things, right? So it's not a bad practice to spend some time daily thinking about things we're grateful for, things that are holy and pure, and all of that. So we have talked some about that before in the show in terms of taking every thought captive. But we do have a choice in terms of what we focus on and what we put in our brain on a daily basis.
And how does this then open the door for us to think about core beliefs?
Well, core beliefs are 4 in nature that Carnes originally described in that first book, Out of the Shadows. And it starts really with the core belief of shame. I am a bad and worthless person. If you understand shame, you know that I'm not a good person, and not even God can love me or God can forgive me. A lot of the addicts who come here, they understand Christian beliefs and Christian theology, and they understand somewhat intellectually and know Scripture in terms of what God did for us through His Son, Jesus Christ. And they may even preach it to others, but they don't necessarily believe it for themselves. In other words, I know God sent Jesus to forgive everybody else except me. And that sounds kind of outrageous, but nevertheless, that's what a lot of the addicts think. I am a bad and worthless person. Not even God's love extends to me. So if you're a person out there wondering that, thinking that, you also would have beliefs along there that no one else has thought about, done some of the things that I've done. No one else has been as egregious as I have been. No one else has been as depraved as I have. You always tend to get into comparisons about how bad you are compared to others. And the reason you don't know about some stuff that other people have done is because you've never chosen to share about your life and some of your secrets.
And doesn't the sex addict think to himself, sex is equal to love, and sex is my most important need?
That's like the second core belief, depending on how you want to order these. But yes, if I'm a bad and worthless person, one of the things I've learned along the way is that maybe one of the ways to medicate that belief is to get what I perceive to be the symbolic acceptance of engaging in sexual activity. And there's a lot of associations here that sex is equal to relief. Sex is equal to love, kindness, nurture, affection, affirmation, and those kinds of things. So, but simply stated, the core belief is that sex is equal to love, and sex is my most important need. The third core belief is that if I'm a bad and worthless person, no one will love me as I am. Doesn't that make logical sense? So I'm a bad person, no one will love me. And then the last core belief that we talk about is that no one will take care of my needs but me. Part of the early level trauma, woundedness, core beliefs is that no one seems to care about me, take care of me, want to be with me. Therefore, I'm going to have to learn how to take care of myself, which is what makes coping and even sometimes addictive activity so appealing. It's the way that I take care of myself.
Well, these core beliefs seem to have formed its own cycle again. Each of these seems to feed from one concept, seems to feed into the next.
You know, one of the ways to tie all this together that we've been talking about is that the challenge, I think, of recovery, of healing journey, is that we don't just heal this problem by stopping something. We don't just stop the behavior. We don't just stop the rituals. But we really need to speak into that shame place and that despairing place. Because unless you can get to a place where you truly understand that you are a good person, you are fearfully and wonderfully made, God has a plan for your life, a plan to prosper you and not to harm you, that God sent His only Son to die for you, until such time as you really embrace that, believe it, accept it, it's going to be hard for you to break through this cycle, because this cycle is the way you've been medicating that shame in many cases for 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. So stop the behavior, yes, and the longer-term healing is through truly a spiritual life in which you fully embrace what God thinks about us and what God has done for us.
And if you're a man that's struggling with these same issues and you're looking to stop and break the vicious cycle that we've been talking about today, we recommend that you look into our Men of Valor intensive 3-day workshops here at Faithful and True. We don't often spend a lot of time talking about it, but it's really what Dr. Laser is best known for. We invite you to go to faithfulandtrue.com and take a look at the descriptions of our workshops, especially the Men of Valor workshop, because we are here to provide hope and help for you. You've been listening to Dr. Mark Laser. We thank Ben Laser, our engineer and technical director, for his help today. I'm Randy Everett, your co-host, and we hope that you have a great week, and we'll be joining you again soon on the Men of Valor program.
You've been listening to the Men of Valor program with Dr. Mark Laser. For information about this program or to learn more about Faithful and True, visit us at faithfulandtrue.com. That's faithfulandtrue.com.